tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 470 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. My name is C. Kohler, and with me tonight, as usual, is Crocodile.
Good evening.
And Seda.
Hello.
All right, welcome back to another week, guys. We did have one piece of news this week to start out our episode with, and that is that we did get a game review this past weekend for the game Reanimal, which I hadn't heard of before.
I had heard of it. I'm not totally familiar on this, but it's from the Little Nightmares developers, and like there's other Little Nightmares games, but they like switch developer partway through. So this is like, I think, the original. Don't quote me on that. It's something like that.
Okay.
The Little Nightmares have like a big series or something.
It's a Bandai Namco like horror side scroller type game.
Yeah, I've heard of Little Nightmares. Yeah. I just didn't know of this game, which I thought must be new. It's in that, it has that same aesthetic. They said it was pretty short, only about 4 hours, but they said it was a really good story. And can you possibly guess what review it got?
The surprising, never seen before, 8 out of 10.
Yes. So this is another game that the Toonami people liked. But I'm assuming they didn't love it. They just liked it.
Yeah.
I don't think I have much more to say about this. It's cool to see another game review. And it's cool art style in that game. But again, like, I haven't played any of the Little Nightmares games, but I'm familiar with them through videos and screenshots and stuff. It looked like that. Same style. Pretty cool. Other than that, we didn't really have any other news this week. The block isn't changing for any time soon. I mean, we're pretty much locked into what we've got now for a while. So no new announcements or any kind of shakeup or anything going on.
I guess the only thing I'd mention, it's a pretty small thing, but since you mentioned quote-unquote One Piece earlier, apparently Popeyes is running a One Piece promotion for fast food or something. Not a big deal. Not super Toonami related, but just popped to mind when you said mention One Piece earlier. So I figured if people like Popeyes and want pay extra for not even themed merchandise, but just the privilege of having a food combination named after One Piece, go ahead and have fun.
It's interesting. It's for the anime?
I think it's either for the live action or for One Piece in general.
Yeah, I just saw a picture, and it's the anime version of Luffy in the picture, so I'm assuming it's probably just the in general, like just One Piece in general. Interesting. Yeah, I did not know that was a thing.
Yeah, not a big deal, but I just figured I'd mention it in case someone cares.
They call it the Luffy Bento Box. That's funny. All right. Well, with that out of the way, I guess we'll go ahead and start with the rundown, and we will begin, of course, with Rooster Fighter. Rooster Fighter Episode 5, The Motley Flock Scatters. So the episode starts out and we do see that guy we saw at the end of the last episode. This guy, I guess, who wants to be a YouTube star. And he's the one who's filming. He hasn't been filming them all along. The shot of him recording the last battle was like his breakthrough trending video.
Yeah, I think he mentioned he was trying to make a channel based on his bug collecting hobby. Obviously, that wasn't going anywhere, but while he was out filming for bugs, he caught the last battle, and that, of course, went viral.
Yeah, he's very much a nerdy looking guy talking to his mom on the phone.
Like a creepy nerd, too, not like a, I don't know, sweet
nerd. No, yeah, not like a cool nerd or savvy nerd. This is very much like the tropey, like big glasses, kind of, you know,
5 o'clock shadow or 10 yeah. o'clock shadow, whatever you want to say. But yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a loser dork.
Yeah. A dork. Yeah.
AKA prime demon material at some point in future.
Oh yeah. That's very likely. I agree. It very much could happen. Yeah, he's got an obsession. So that's part of it. Yeah. Anyway, the video's getting out and, Keiichi and crew are walking down the street and everybody's recognizing them. They're, oh my God, it's those chickens. I kind of like this moment too, where they're like, why are they all looking at us? And then like Pyoko's like, well, of course it's because I'm so cute. But they're like, oh, we got to get out of here because a bunch of thugs, I guess a bunch of, I don't know what it's just, I guess.
It's just like some of these kids just want to like beat them up, I guess.
Or be no, famous. I think
they're like, definitely adults, but I think they just want to be like, oh, look, a famous chicken. Let me catch the famous chicken and I'll be famous too or whatever. I don't think they're thinking that much more about it besides that.
Yeah, more like just to get famous or something. Yeah, so they run away and they hide out under a bridge and Elizabeth's like, hey, we need to hide here while the humans are looking for us. We can just stay out of sight. But KG's like, oh, that's not my style. I don't hide. I'm a roamer. And they get into an argument and KG's like, I don't have to do what you say. I'm done with this. I'm going to leave you guys. See you. I'm leaving. And he just takes off.
Yep.
And as he's going down the street, oh, I will say quickly that Pyoko follows him kind of shortly afterwards.
Well, Pyoko tries to follow him, but we see that Pyoko sticks with Elizabeth throughout the rest of the episode.
Yeah. She kind of starts to take off here. Elizabeth follows too, and yeah, they're kind of like, they do stay together, but I think she's at odds with Elizabeth very much most of the episode.
From until beginning. The
end. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Keiichi's going down the street, and he's walking by an arcade.
Pachinko like, parlor. Oh.
Yeah, well, they call it an arcade in the episode, but it's both. And he looks in, he's like, oh, those machines that the humans get addicted to. And he walks up to one of them, and he sees that there's a demon playing slots.
And he like hears his voice in like his head or something, so he kind of like can like sense that it's not a human.
I think the demon was speaking telepathically to him, because I think yeah. KG walked in, noticed something was off, and then he heard a voice, and then he realized the demon was speaking with him, and he was like, holy shit, it's a demon, and then...
Yeah, and it's a friendly demon.
Yeah, even though it was mentioned to him a couple episodes ago by Elizabeth that, you know, there are these abnormal demons, this is like the first one he's met sort of in that way, because he's like, oh, you're not going to attack me? And he's like, no, I don't attack anybody. I'm just here to enjoy myself. And he lets KG play slots with him. And then they leave, and this demon, whose name is Morio, says that, oh, you know, I feel kind of guilty, you know. I should give these winnings back.
I think he said he won the winnings from money found on the ground or something, and then he used that, converted to winnings. I think so. I think that was part of the reason he was feeling so guilty.
Yeah.
That's kind of a weird logic. If it's just like money you found on the ground, it's like it doesn't, if it's very obviously like abandoned and no obvious way to find who owns it, then it's like, I don't know, don't feel bad that the money is just yours now. It's not like you stole it.
I mean, true, but I think it's clearly, it's like also still, even if he picked it up, it's clearly wasn't his money, technically.
Yeah,
like, obviously, there was no way to return it to someone, but it was definitely not his money to begin with, so. And also, he's kind of a really, really good guy, so he's the kind of guy who would think those sorts of thoughts, or at least from what the impression you get from him, so.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I thought it was a little strange that he went that far, but you're right, that they're really painting him as this, like, he's not just a nice demon, he's like a really nice demon. And KG kind of sees this as an opportunity. He's like, oh, well, I don't know what you could do. You know, you keep that money, you earned it. And by the way, you could buy me some sea urchin. And he's like, okay, buys him some sea urchin. I think KG's like, this is disgusting. Cause I guess it's not fresh or something.
It looked like a sprite or something, but I'm not sure.
It looked like grocery. It's like, I kind of imagine it's like grocery store sushi, which I don't know isn't necessarily disgusting, but it's like definitely like the lowest tier of sushi you can get. It was like a prepackaged thing. And it was actually kind of amusing that he like barfed up like rainbow and it was all like censored.
Yeah, that's often, you see that in a lot of anime when people vomit, they don't show like actual vomit. It's like,
yeah, because it's, you know, no one wants to see gross vomit, even animated. So it's just kind of, they stylize it.
It's pretty much become a staple of anime that like, it, as much as like the sweat drop and other like tropes, it's like the rainbow vomit is another, which I love. I love to see it every time it shows up because it's fun.
And like censored rainbow vomit, that specific type of like, visual gag is very much, as Secret was saying, like the anime sweat drop or the nosebleed or whatnot, very anime coded trope.
Yeah, it's pretty fun though. And then Seda posted another one, which is the pulsing
or the anger veins.
The anger veins that appear on the side of your head. Yeah, I'll tell you, when I first saw that, I don't know, decades ago or whatever, like I didn't really know what that was. Yeah. For a while, and then I kind of figured it out. I'm like, oh, it's a vein.
Anyway. Yeah, I think everyone, like when you're, I don't know, 12 years old watching Dragon Ball or something, like, what is that? Like, symbol.
What is that?
Yeah.
Well, Morio takes Keiji back to where he's living, which is in this, like, little, like a tent off the side of the road somewhere. And, you know, they're really bonding, and... Morio starts to tell him his backstory, which is actually kind of interesting. I'll give you the brief rundown here real quick. Basically, Morio was born from a human whose name was Morio. And Morio was this human who learned that he had cancer. And he was going to die soon, but he was really upset that he wasn't going to be able to live a full life. And so this is when the demon broke off from that human and it was going to get ready to start, like, it was big and muscly and it was going to ravage things. And I'm going to live the life you could never live because you're going to die. And then just as a joke, or I mean, it's a joke to the audience, but it's, I guess, you know, it's real in the show. It's kind of ridiculous is that he just gets a phone call and he's like, oh, we're sorry. We had your stuff mixed up. You actually don't have cancer. You're not going to die.
Feel bad for the other. I feel bad for the other person who got a clean bill of health. And like, oh yeah, actually, that's
true. I mean, that is. I think that's lose your license tier fuck up. Yeah. Like, I don't know. That's like egregious. Like, you can be sued. Like,
yeah, this is again one of those moments where the show is really leaning in more to the comedy because that's it's just ridiculous. Even the way that they did it, they're just like, oh, sorry.
I mean, medical malpractice is a thing, and like people, you know, doctors get punished for it, but that's just. Especially egregious and like, yeah.
And the way the doctor talks on the phone, he's like very like, how silly of me. It was a
whoopsie daisy.
No big deal. Yep. Whoops.
That's the comedy part. Yeah, for sure. It's like a don't think too much about it. It's just a funny, you know, funny situation. Anyway, the point is that the human isn't going to die and he's like, oh, I can leave. I'm going to live my life.
And now the demon is like, well, if you're going to live your life, what am I going to do?
Yeah,
I guess like, I can't live my own life or whatever.
It's like, why do I exist?
Yeah.
And then over time, he changed and turned back into kind of like this really docile, friendly human.
Friendly demon.
Demon.
Yeah, he kept being bullied by the townsfolk and eventually shrank is what he had said.
Yeah, it seemed like even though he started out as like a big muscle demon, he, I guess, was just trying to like fit into society, and then everyone, you know, assaulted him or bullied him at worst or at best, and, you know, attacked him at worst. And then he even kind of mentions like, I even shrunk in size, like he got smaller over time to become what he is now.
And the takeaway here is that just the interesting part of it is that even though Morio the demon was born out of the heightened, you know, anxiety or emotions of the real Morio, like they are separate beings, and they just he has no reason to exist, and so he just started living life normally. Anyway, after telling that story to Keiji, they share some sake, they get drunk. Keiji does a goofy dance for him.
A chicken dance, I think he said. After he
chicken
threw
dance
up again.
Yeah. And then they had just kind of like, they decided to break off, and they're like, yeah, well, I hope I see you again someday, Keiji, and, you know, come see me again. And then KG looks up and a storm is brewing, and that's when we get the first commercial break. When we come back, Piyoko and Elizabeth are fighting because, you know, Piyoko's finally like, oh, you drove him away because you've been so mean to him this whole time. And it starts to rain, and they're like, we got to get out of the rain. And then this little girl spots them. Her name is Misuzu. And she comes up to them and is like, oh, little chickens and a little chick. Oh, you guys need someplace to stay. I'll take you back to my house. So she carries them home. Misuzu lives with her ill, or maybe bedridden, I guess is the right term, grandfather.
He's definitely pretty sick. I mean, I think they said he was specifically 85 or 86. So he's like, I mean, there's some like old manitis, but I think he's also like just generally sick on top of that.
Yeah.
She mentioned she wanted to be a doctor to help cure him. And I'll think to myself, right. Lady, he's probably going to die before you get your doctor, before you get your medical degree. So
well, she's not being an
asshole, but she's like 7 and he's 86. So
yeah, it's a bit naive.
Yeah. That's just childish, you know, thinking.
No, of course. Right. But there's just a thought that ran across my
mind.
Yeah,
it's kind of funny. Yeah, I didn't even catch on that. I just thought of it. I think I just took it so wholesomely. She's like, I'm going to be a doctor to save him. Anyway, she's really cute and she's doing all the housework and everything. And Elizabeth's really impressed. And of course, Elizabeth breaks out the old text-to-speech again and kind of shocks them for like a minute, for a moment. They're just, again, humans are just like, wow. You're using a cell phone. Anyway.
She did remark that they were smart chickens. Like, wow, they're so smart. So, like, there is some acknowledgement. But, again, in the world of demons, I suppose things like this can only be so shocking.
I guess. I know, but no, I wait for the day that somebody's going to be like, holy shit, how did you become so smart? Nobody asks that question. They just accept it. Anyway. Yeah, she praises her. She's like, oh, you're really good and you're smart and you're a good girl and everything. And then she notices that the floodwaters are getting closer and stuff's going to rise. And they're like, we need to get out of here. And the grandpa's like, oh, I've lived here for 50 years. It's never going to rise.
He literally says 85 years, I think.
Did he? Yeah. So. Oh, I guess he is 85. Okay.
That's how we know how old he is, because he said, I've been living here my entire life. And he's like, of course, you know that narrator. The dam broke, or not dam, the riverbank overflowed or something. Like,
this will never happen.
Yeah, the sirens go off. People come running up to the door, knocking on it. You need to evacuate. It's an evacuation alert. And they're finally convinced. And so Misuzu, gets her grandfather into a wheelchair and is trying to wheel him to, up to higher ground where the shelter is for the community shelter. She can't get it up the hill or whatever. And then this is kind of the big moment where Piyoko and Elizabeth kind of respect each other. They're like, oh, you know, Elizabeth recognizing how driven Piyoko is with trying to save the two humans. And then, you know, and Piyoko's kind of like at this point kind of realizes that, you know, Elizabeth's not that bad, that she's, you know, trying to kill the demons, and they kind of make up basically.
Basically, Piyoko recognizes that Elizabeth is the embodiment of duty, because Elizabeth, her goal basically is just to help people. And then she kind of reflexes in terms of of course, the tattoo that bestowed upon her by Pops and its meaning, stuff like that. So it kind of a mutual respect builds between them. And they're both seeing each other as oh, yeah, you have your good heart. You're trying to do the right thing, handshake or wing shake, whatever you want to call it, metaphorically.
Yep. They make it, with the help of the two chickens, which again, it, you know, whatever, just give it a pass. It doesn't seem like it would really help, but it did. It was enough to get the old man up to safety.
We'll mention here that I thought Piyoko's help was kind of embellished for effect and whatnot, but Elizabeth actually called out saying, wow, Piyoko seemed to be freakishly strong for her size and whatnot. So I'm not sure if that's maybe hinting that maybe Piyoko has powers of her own or something of that sort. But they kind of emphasize that it wasn't just visual effect, but that Piyoko actually really helped with her last push and whatnot. So that might be, again, foreshadowing something, but I'm not sure.
I agree. I actually thought that in that moment. There was actually an animation sort of flash when she was pushing that kind of made me feel wait a minute, this is more than just her conviction. Maybe there's something else to this.
Yeah, I thought it was a visual effect at first, but given that Elizabeth then like called it out and emphasized it, I was like, okay, it's not just a visual effect or something. It's like, okay, she was actually exhibiting like maybe super strength for a moment there or something.
And then the last scene of the episode, we cut back and we see the demon Morio, and he's kind of noticing something. He's like, I hear a strange sound and there's some rumbling, and he realizes that the nearby dam is starting to crack and that it's going to break soon and it's going to flood and kill everyone in the town. And this is kind of where the episode ends.
Kind of the first time we have an episode that's not, you know, more or less standalone, like two-parter.
Yeah.
Individual, like, you know, this current conflict.
Yeah, I will say that I really enjoyed this episode a lot. I think this show is pretty good about telling a story. Again, I feel like I have to preface this by always saying a story about chickens. But like, I mean, overall, it's still entertaining and the characters are interesting. And the idea of like meeting the like nice demon and like seeing what his story was actually interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Character growth. It kind of has everything you would want to have in a story. So they're not dropping the ball, at least when it comes to the narrative here, I think. I think it's all right.
I think we've seen a lot of like shonen or whatever similar series like not try, and this show is clearly trying to its credit.
Yeah, and again, I think I said this a couple episodes ago, but like, you know, we were told that this was a popular manga, which I mean, at the time, I think I heard that, I was just like, really? But I guess I'm starting to get it. Like, just because the protagonists are chickens isn't a guarantee that it's just a gag comic or a gimmick. It's like there's actually a story here. I mean, if the characters weren't chickens, the story would be not that different. You know what I'm saying? It's just that the gimmick is that they're chickens.
Right,
Yeah.
the comedy is derived from the chickenery, or if, I don't think that's a word, but like for example, they couldn't tell all the sex jokes they could if they were humans as opposed to chicken.
Guess not, no. Hopefully not. Be a totally different genre then. Yeah, any other thoughts you guys on this episode?
I could have sworn the demon's name was Mario, but maybe I misheard that. That's what I thought, but again, maybe I misheard
Oh,
that. I
you
thought
were
that.
hearing Mario?
That's what I thought the demon's name was, but
Did
again.
the subtitles say Morio, like the
Yeah.
closed captions? Okay.
It said Mario
Okay,
with
I
an
didn't,
O.
obviously, I just didn't watch the subtitles, so all right, fair enough.
Okay. That is Rooster Fighter. Oh, and State is right. This is a two-parter at least, because we have a to be continued at the end of this. I mean, not literally, but like it's pretty evident the story's not over here, so.
Also, the preview kind of takes up, like, I'm not going to discuss necessarily preview if we get, you know, but it does go into the continuation of the damn plot line, and so we can see it's definitely continuing the story pretty straightforwardly.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's move on to Don to Don. Don to Don, Season 2, Episode 3. You won't get away with this. Not sure I know what that means. I mean, I know what it means, but I don't know why that's the name of it.
Could be
Yeah, it
about the
is.
Kato's talking to Momo or something, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
It's the only thing that makes any sense.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Oh, or it could be Okoroon's referring to evil, speaking to the evil eye, maybe.
Yeah, because he was mad about him attacking Momo.
So this could have multiple meanings, so yeah.
Yeah, could be that. That makes the most sense, I think. Well, like I said, I don't have a whole lot of notes for this one because this is a pretty action-packed episode, and there's a lot of big beats, basically. So I wrote down that Okoroon and Momo are trying to escape.
They do the patent Mario jumps off Yoshi and the technique.
Yeah, he comes up with this idea to launch Momo. The hole to get out is too high up in the air, so he puts Momo on the back of like a door or something and a piece of wood or whatever, and crouches down. He's gonna kick her like
it was like a lazy boy or something.
Oh, that's right. Okay. And he kicks her way up into the air, and then the rest of the way she has to use her psychic powers to grab on. And it works, and she gets out. But now that she's out, she's not sure what to do. She knows from, and we get a little flashback to when her and Gigi were kids, and he's like talking about a worm, and they're like, oh yeah, well, you know, when it rains, the worms have to come up to the surface to dry out, or they'll drown.
Well, they dry out when they get to the surface, but they come out to avoid drowning. So, but
yeah. And so this gives her an idea. She's like, I know what I'll do, and I'll start a fire. And so she sets the house on fire in the hopes that the fire department will come. So while this is happening, we cut back down, and Okaroon and Gigi are now fighting, and it's epic. And by the way, I mean, the animation in this episode is just insanely good. Like, it's so good.
Science,
kind of animators be flexing. It's so they're flexing like in ways where I'm just like I was just stunned. Like, I'm just like, gosh damn, this looks again. It, like, it's I hate to be so pedantic, but I just got to say, like it's one. It's like you see like an anime movie, you know, and you're like, oh well, this is movie animation. This isn't something you do for a television show. And this looks like a movie to me. It's like it's that good.
Yeah, the Don Don production has always been really strong, and this it just continues to trend throughout season two. I can just tell you, I don't think it's much a spoiler to say this, but there definitely is some, you know, the animation beats don't stop here. I'll just say that much. There's some good stuff.
Well, I mean, we're in three episodes of this season, and every one of them looked great. And this one especially looked, I mean, it's hard to say it even looks better. It just looks really good. Gigi uses an ability, though. I shouldn't say Gigi. It's not him. It's the evil eye. Evil Eye uses an ability, and it captures Okaroon inside this sort of cursed house. It's like a little tiny house-shaped barrier.
I want to say it's like the Space Stone from Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, if I'm thinking the right stone. I don't know if you guys are familiar with fighting games or that much, but that's definitely what it reminded me of.
Yeah, you can't escape, but the Evil Eye can go in there and starts beating on him. But Okaroon is like, he basically is like, well, you were going to force me to go all out. And so he goes all out and he starts kicking the evil eye like ridiculously. And he counts to 20 and he does this like 10 times.
It's not kicks, actually. It's his training routines. Remember from, I think it was the last season we saw him doing these exercises in the school and the back and whatnot. It's these same exercises he was doing that he basically just did like at mock speed or whatever.
Oh, I don't think I put that together. That's a cool callback.
I don't know if they're crunches or what they're called. They have a specific name because they're like definitely like a known type of exercise style or technique. But that's basically what he was doing. And that's why he was counting part of it. It was like one, you know, doing repetitions, but so he was exercising, but used it as an attack.
Yeah, that makes more sense now. Yeah. Anyway, it works. He's able to knock the evil eye out of the house, dissipating it, and they're free. We get the commercial break, and when we come back, we hear Turbo Granny yelling out angrily, as she often does. And we see that she is now stuck in that, like, sticky goop that the worm produced. And so Okaroon goes down to try to save her, and she's giving him a lot of, you know, don't sass. You fall in, you idiot! And he's like, I'm not going to fall in. I got to go slow. Hurry it up! She's like a real jerk, but that's her. That's who she is. But even though he tried really hard, he gets stuck too.
Narrator, he falls in.
Up on the surface, the cops come, and it's a bunch of townspeople, and they're, you know, because of the fire. And the cops are like, how did this fire get started? She's like, I set it on fire to get you here because of this. You know, she's trying to explain to them what's happening. They don't really believe her. They're trying to arrest her.
I mean, yeah, if a girl just said, oh, yeah, I did an arson, I would definitely arrest her ass on the spot, too.
You know, I will say, don't tell me, Crocodile, but I will say there was one of the police officers, he had, like, weird eyes, and I kind of thought for a moment, like, is he a Kito? But then I think maybe he just had a weird character design, but whatever. It probably was nothing, but Anyway, I just pointed that out. And anyway, she kind of breaks free for a moment, and then they're trying to put out the fire, and this is causing the water to flow into the sanctuary or whatever that temple or whatever that thing, that area. And the worm comes crashing out. It's a pretty long sequence. Again, it looks really great, but it's basically a long sequence of the worm just kind of writhing around, trying to survive. But it ultimately dies.
And
it
tries to hide for a bit, but then Momo just smashes the rest of the house to expose it to the sunlight. So remember, she like tosses a fire truck or whatever.
Yeah, and she kicks it, and she's like, "Are you dead?" And she's like, "Ha." But then it moves. She's like, "Oh, no." And she freaks out again. But it just comes up one more time, and it pukes out the Kitos, who are still alive.
We saw its skin all like burn and kind of like petrify and whatnot. So it was like the sunlight killed it. That was planned for the sunlight to kill it, and that worked. But then, as you mentioned, it has one last throw, so to speak. And then out.
Yeah, it's dead now. Well, I guess. I mean, it's not moving or whatever. It pukes up the Kitos, and the first thing they say is like, "Now you've done it. You screwed everything up." And she's like, "What are you talking about? I killed the monster." And they're like. And then you hear a rumble, and sure enough, the volcano erupts. The thing that the worm apparently prevents, now that it's dead, it's not preventing it. That's what they're insinuating here. And that's the episode.
Talk about a fiery conclusion or fiery cliffhanger.
Out of the fire and into the lava?
I'm really getting what you were talking about how like this is a long arc. In that it's not a real clear way to separate, you know, where you're going to stop it. So,
yeah, this is actually, you know how a lot of times they're doing like, we'll air the first few episodes as like, quote unquote, movie in theaters. Like they're doing this for, I think, actually the last arc of Bleach, getting a quote unquote movie aired in American theaters in June for the first few episodes of the last like arc. So it's a thing they've been doing commonly. I think Demon Slayer did it too. But this was aired in theaters, both in Japan and also in the United States, with dub, obviously. That's the first three episodes of the season, and so this quote-unquote movie ended right here for volcanic explosion.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Huh.
So then you have to wait like quite a bit till the actual rest of the season aired, so that was quite the cliffhanger.
And I was talking earlier about how this is theater film quality animation. It literally is.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts, guys, on this? Seda, you have any thoughts on this?
No, just an excellent, you know, like this episode, I mean, all these episodes have looked great, but this one especially so. And, you know, there's a lot that needs to get reconciled here, you know. Okarun is stuck. Gigi is still being held hostage. The volcano's erupting. House
Kitos are alive again. They're still alive.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that need to get solved or reconciled here.
Yeah, it continues to be very entertaining, and it's a real looker of a show. It's definitely at the top of the list of best looking shows so far this year. And I don't want to just harp on the fact that it looks good because it's entertaining as well.
Oh yeah, it's just A+ material. Like it's just fantastic. But
I'm not so much glad that. Toonami is footing the bill to get this show on the block because it's really paying off. Okay, and that is it for Dandadan. We'll see what happens with the volcano next week. Meanwhile, let's talk about another show on the block that I'm less interested in, but nonetheless, we talk about it every week. So that is Blue Lock. Blue Lock, Episode 10. It's just the way it is. Oh, God, I got to think about these titles more before I read them out loud, because this is another one I don't think I know. Maybe this is referring to Kuon, but he takes a lot of... he has a lot to do in this episode.
Yeah, the redemption arc we all expected has begun, unfortunately.
Yeah, we called it. Not that it was especially, you know, unexpected, so...
Yeah, I still feel like there's a chance here that it's going to be a partial redemption, that he's going to be, like, tolerated but not liked, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Anyway, we see that at the beginning of the episode that, the match is still going on. Kuon is getting really mad because his team that he is siding with isn't, you know, doing well enough.
Yeah, and he basically does the math in his head where he's like, you know, as long as everything stays how it is, if the game is tied and I guess this might be a little bit later after a few goals.
That's fine. Go ahead.
I think they each score a goal. Each team scores a goal. And then when it's tied again, he basically determines like I have 3 goals. Kunigami also has 3 goals, but I have a better like player ranking. So as long as everything stays how it is, then I will be fine. Don't do anything. Don't do a damn thing. I think he says what he says at that moment. So,
well, let's rewind a little bit. So the first big thing that happens in the episode is that I wrote down that Nagi takes initiative because he has evolved to be curious about the game. So basically Isagi is pointing out that just as Team Z is evolving in their abilities, also Team V is evolving, and Nagi's evolution, because we see him glow in the eyes and everything.
He's getting a personality.
Yeah, he's finally like, oh, wait, this soccer's kind of fun.
Yeah, what happens if I take this seriously?
Yep. And that does not bode well for our good guys. Then my next note says that, because the whole episode is the match, and the match isn't even over yet. Isagi blocks Nagi's attack. I keep wanting to say attack, his goal.
An attack. I think that's a fair slip of the tongue.
Okay, I'll say attack because that just comes naturally. So Isagi blocks Nagi's attack, and then this is so that the whole team can begin attacking in waves. So all of Team Z is attacking in different kind of waved actions. And this ultimately allows them to, once again, tie up the game.
Yeah, then it's kind of hokey, but at this point, Isagi is like, that's my power. Like, I see the board as like a puzzle, and, you know, I know all the moves, and I can like put the simulation in my head and kind of predict it. And yeah, like this goal that they scored, like everyone is right in the right spot, and they had like, you know, 3 deflections or whatever, but everyone was like ready to like, you had their ability and was in the right spot because of, I guess, Isagi's, you know,
his Sharingan.
Yeah, the visual prowess is the term they'd be using this Naruto. But
yeah, that's what I wrote down during in the chat as well. I was like, he's got his Sharingan now. I mean, to be more specific, he realizes that his special formula is that since he has super visual prowess, he can go to where he needs to be. Mm-hmm. In at any point in the match, he can find the weakness on his team because he knows where everyone's going to be and what they're going to do. So his super spatial visual prowess awareness just allows him to be at right spot.
It's
at the
like
right
near
time.
It's almost future sight, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It is very Sharingan like, though. Everybody's got glowing eyes in this show.
Does he have blue eyes or red eyes?
Blue.
I don't know. They all go blue when everyone gets their powers, but I don't know what his normal eye color is. Probably brown, but I don't know.
Yeah, it would have been too on the nose if his natural eye color is red, I suppose.
Yeah. Why do they call it Blue Lock anyway? Is there a significance to the color blue in soccer?
Not more than any other color. I mean, red and yellow have, like, as we kind of see later in the episode, have implications for the card system, but I can't think of anything that blue in particular would...
For the record, I do believe Isaki's eyes are blue. So
there was an earlier episode where they referred to their rank as their BL rank, and like BL
always love rank. Yeah,
yes. So is that the reason why they call it Blue Lock? They could use the BL.
You know what? That's the best reason I've heard. So I'm going with it. That's got to be it. It's their BL. Okay. Anyway, after the commercial break, We finally get the full Kuon flashback here, his sad, sad story. Basically,
yeah, you called this.
But yeah, he basically, when he was in high school, he wanted to, you know, win. He wanted to lead his team. But ultimately, the point of it is that his team are like not as driven as he is. They weren't as serious. And so
he took it seriously, and everyone else was just like, oh, this is fun after school activity.
Yeah,
he really
wanted
to get into like the professional leagues. But to do that, you do have to take this seriously.
And he's just like, why aren't you trying harder? And they're just like, why are you so bent out of shape about it? It's just a game, you know, whatever. Let's go eat. And so he gets really mad. And this is kind of when he sets him on the path of being like, I can only look out for myself. And he gets, you know, invited to Blue Lock. And that's why he won't play.
That's why I guess he was Trey's pitch, was like, only me, myself, and I can actually succeed or push it through to the top. So I'm just going to look out for number one. And
Yeah. He's, I'm only going to look out for myself. I can't trust anybody. It's his thing. My next note says that Isagi miscalculates Nagi. I forget what happened there.
I think Nagi was driving down the field, and then, like, I think he passed, and then, like, or something, like, he didn't expect him. Because, like, Nagi had an open shot, and because he, like, did some passing they didn't expect, and then the only way that, like, they're like, oh, no, our Blue Lock Dream is over, they're going to score. And at this point, that after Kuan had his, like, personal, like, you know, flash before his eyes, internal monologue, internal grief, whatever, and he just flies across the field and tackles Nagi into the ground and gets a red card ejecting himself, but stops Nagi from...
Yeah. So what it was is that Isagi was like, he had planned out like the three ways that Nagi could get the ball and that he could block all three way or two ways or whatever. And then what he doesn't expect that Nagi is going to hit the ball with his back. So Nagi like hits the ball with his like back shoulder. And he's like, I didn't see that coming, but you're right. Then Kuan has the moment. He tackles Nagi and gets a red card. So this means that he's both out of the game and now he has a card against him, which means he is of a lower rank. So what he says here is he's basically saying that I decided that you guys have to win. I put my faith in you.
Yeah, he kind of like in the moment decides in a way this is the right thing to do. Like, now you have to win. And like not looking out just for myself anymore, and now my fate lies in your hands at this point.
Yeah.
So it's like somewhat of like a
kind of
finding his conscience. I mean, at the very end of the episode, I guess I'll discuss it. They obviously, when you get penalized or when you get a card during a goal opportunity, then the other team gets a free kick, so they have to block this free kick. And so that's basically the last sequence of this episode, is like, the obviously everyone's monologuing to themselves, like, where is he gonna kick it? And then it gets blocked, and then like there's a couple of rebounds, but they all get blocked. And so basically the team Z saves the free kick, like the goal is blocked. And at that point, at the very end of the episode, Kuan is like excited about this. He's like, they blocked it, they have a chance, holy cow. And that's the end. So
I mean, the sequence was actually the coolest part of the episode to me, was this final sequence where it was just like reverse Uno, reverse Uno, reverse Uno, like at the end there. And everybody is like stepping up, like all his teammates are like using their gifts in like cool ways. But the final thing that happens is that the ball finally makes its way to Isagi, and now he has this last chance to hit it. And that's where the episode ends. Like, what's he going to do?
Well, score, because they have to, otherwise the series ends. So
exactly. Yeah. But I'm sure the real question is, will he do something clever or will he just kick? I don't know. We'll see.
He'll pass it to Bakugo and let him score.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, all we know right now is, I thought they kind of set it up like he has to shoot, but I don't know if he's going to. But
I was kind of joking. I feel like kind of the standard thing that they would do is have Isagi get the game winning goal, but maybe they'll swerve it in some small way. I don't know.
He's not always the goal getter though. In this
show.
Yeah,
but if this show was as boring as it could possibly be, they would have him score because he's the main character.
No, I do think it would be a little too much if he had the Sharingan and also is the best scorer on the team.
Yeah,
I think it's probably better for the narrative and character development and distribution of roles that he's not the best scorer on the team.
Yeah,
that's an interesting way to look at it, because this is a show about who's going to be the greatest striker. And so far, there's not really setting him up for that. He's setting up to be more, he's kind of more like a coach or a captain.
Yeah, he's like a facilitator.
Yeah.
I make everyone else better.
So he's pretty much not going to win Blue Lock, but we'll see.
Well, I mean, I assume something will change down the line. Like, this is still like the opening rounds, the base level. So
there's like 20 other teams.
Yeah.
How crazy can things get?
pretty crazy.
I mean, I assume they'll start being like, you know, I mean, Food Wars basically got into like superpowers, so I figure
they're already superpowers and stands. So, yeah,
like I would not be surprised if it got pretty fucking crazy by the end.
Well,
but
if this show wants to hold my attention, that's what they need to do.
Yeah, there's going to be some sort of power creep of some sort. There has to be.
I think so. Yeah, I hope so.
People just counting down until they introduce the soccer stands.
The soccer stands, or they just straight up like Ego is like, now the ball has dynamite in it or something, you know, crazy.
Anti-gravity court or field, excuse me.
Yeah, that actually makes more sense, because they would, like, in a world where soccer is everything, like the greatest technologies on the planet are used for soccer. So they'll have like gravity manipulation, anti-gravity soccer. All right. There's Blue Lock. You guys have anything to say that wasn't covered or you want to point out? It's Blue Lock. Let's see what they do with Kuon. I mean,
oh God, he's going to be like, oh, Kuon, we love you. You're the best man on the team. Oh, let's all hug and kiss. And
I mean, I think what I honestly, really honestly expect to happen is they'll be like, at the end, when they win, because Kuon, they'll be like, all right, you did something nice, but we still don't trust you. And then about two or three episodes later, they're going to be best friends again.
I'm sure Bakugo will be like all tsundere about it, but then they're probably
or maybe he'll never trust him, but everybody else will be like, Bakugo, chill out. He's all right now. But it'll take a few episodes. If they literally next episode are like, Kuon's back on the team and he's our friend, I'm going to be like, oh God.
I guess his knees get to survive for another season or whatever.
All right. Well, that is it for the Blue Lock. We were kind of going through teams for a while there, but we've been on Team V for like three episodes now.
Well, I definitely feel this is the better or the best of the matches so far, but I guess it's also been the most extensive one. So
yeah,
kind of by default.
This is like the group final boss. I know there's obviously like there's like the next round after this. So,
you know, I was paying attention to the opening and they show all the teams that have been in this season. And I think there's like one more. I saw some characters that I was like, I don't recognize those guys.
It's episode 10, right?
Yeah, we'll probably get a new opening at 13 or whatever. The halfway point is, I'm guessing.
That's true.
That would resolve the issue, yeah. Like, I think we're not halfway through the season yet, but also if you get a new opening, that would be like, oh, here are the other teams. And so, yeah, that would resolve itself pretty easily.
Yeah, here's teams T through W or whatever.
Yeah.
Or team, there isn't no, we already beat W.
Yeah, we have to go another, up.
Yeah, whatever. The next
whatever
five.
The next lowest letter is. or Ego will be like, all right, you guys move on to the next tier or something.
Or now the teams become numbers or something, or I don't know, symbols, I don't know.
All right, that's it for Blue Lock. Let's move on to the next show on the block. Let's go to Tokyo Revengers.
I will mention I do need to head out, but I'll say it was funny when Takamichi's friends came to save him and then they immediately get their asses beat. Now, granted, they still stall for time, so that was useful in that sense, but it was kind of funny how they were like, we're going to save you, Takamichi, and then like the next scene is them getting cut to their asses getting beat. So that was funny, and I guess good on Takamichi for actually finally giving Kumasa his just deserves. Obviously, that didn't like resolve everything, but that douchebag needed to be taken down a peg, so Takamichi, you know, his balls finally dropped and he did a thing, and so that was cool.
Yeah. Right,
and fighting someone with a knife is always scary, so I like, I'm sympathetic to that a little bit because he could have easily died. So, but still, good on him for, you know, doing a thing finally.
Agree. All right. Well, we'll talk to you then, next week then, Crocodile. Tokyo Revengers, episode 10, Re-Rise, as in Draken rises from the dead.
Yeah, last episode I'm pretty sure I said Draken looks dead. Guess not. He's fine.
No.
Well, he's not fine, but he's alive.
In real life, it's like anime, but in real life, if you'd gotten stabbed,
he was like in a pool of his own blood.
There's too much blood loss, he would definitely be dead, but yeah, well.
Or at least unconscious.
He's not, like, no, he shouldn't be standing
conscious.
Up. Yeah. Okay, anyway, the episode starts. Hanma is fighting Mikey again.
This Hanma guy just kind of showed up out of nowhere, and it's like, I'm the most threatening person here, I suppose.
I guess he is, yeah. And then my next note is, after already giving up, Takemichi tries saving Draken. Which is basically, we literally get like a scene that this isn't word for word, but it's basically to the effect of, Draken is dead. Oh my gosh, he's dead. I can't believe he died. He's dead. He's dead. Oh, wait, he's alive? It's like, yeah. Come on, man. Takemichi's just not trying. Anyway, and Mikey's like, get him out of here. And so he picks Draken up on his back, and the girls are there, and they kind of help him, like, help the all four of them escape, basically.
And they called an ambulance, and it's like, oh, you had phones the whole time. I would have helped.
That's a good point. Yep. This is another, like, I mean, if this was a manga that was written in the 1980s, it would make a lot more sense. But I'm pretty sure this is relatively new, so.
Like, I could have maybe bought the argument. I don't know what a kimono, you know, like, I could have bought the argument, like, if they're in wearing their kimonos, maybe they don't have pockets and they can't carry their phones on them or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But.
No, it's poorly done. I agree with you. There are definitely narrative ways they could have prevented them from using the phone, but they just didn't. They just had them.
Until now, when they needed it.
Yeah. So. They don't use them until the moment. Yeah. They could have used it earlier. Anyway. That's not even the main issue. I mean, Takemichi's also the problem, like I said last episode. He could have verbally warned.
Yeah.
Draken. He was like 10 feet away. Anyway. So they call an ambulance, but it takes a while to get there. And then Kiyomasa and his thugs show up. And
this is kind of a long, drawn-out sequence where it's like Takemichi basically has to stand up at this point. He can't run away, can't go anywhere, can't let Draken die. So he's like, I have to stand up against this guy. Even though you think he stands no chance. And, you know, it is a bit drawn out, but he eventually, after, you know, kind of, I guess, kind of raising his own confidence, he eventually tries to throw a punch.
Yeah. Draken kind of regains consciousness here. And he's like, all you guys run, I'll take them, you know, which he can't, of course, but he's telling them to do that. Again, more good guy Draken here, like really looking out for other people over himself, which is nice. But yeah, you're like you said, Takemichi. And then the episode ends in this, like, which I'm sure in the manga was like an epic moment for readers where he's like, I'm finally going to take my revenge. Dun, dun, dun.
Well, that's revenge. Actually, that wasn't even how the episode ended. That was the before the commercial break.
Oh, that's what I meant to say. Sorry.
Yeah.
I meant to say right before the commercial break. He's like, I'm going to get my revenge. Remember the name?
Yeah, it was. Yes. It was kind of corny.
Yeah, a little bit.
There was like an action shot that I'm sure was just like a redrawing of the manga panel. Right?
Yeah. The final shot where, like, I'm sure there was like a lightning bolt in the background or something. Anyway, come back from the commercial break and everyone is kind of betting on Takemichi winning. So like Kiyomasa is like, oh, I'm gonna kick your butt and everything. And all these thugs are like laughing at him, but like Draken and all the girls are like, I think Takemichi's gonna win. I'm gonna bet 5,000 yen. I'm gonna bet whatever 1,000 yen. He tries to take on Kiyomasa, but Kiyomasa's, you know, he's a thug and a killer, and he's breaks out a knife and stabs Takemichi in the hand, which, by the way, I just thought of this just now, that this is going to have an effect, isn't it? I mean, like, think about it.
I also noted that Takemichi is left-handed. That's where he threw a punch with.
Which hand did he get stabbed in, though? Left
the left hand.
Okay,
so that was the hand he was throwing a punch with, so I assume it means he's left-handed. I don't know if that matters, but...
No.
Sometimes seems to come back later. It's like, what is the handedness of characters? You don't normally think about it, but when a moment comes up like this where we can conclusively say he must be left-handed, you wouldn't throw a punch with your non-dominant hand. So
yeah, my best friend is left-handed, and he often points out times like this where characters he notices are left-handed. The most famous that he notices is Link from Legend of Zelda.
unless you're playing Twilight Princess Wii version.
He hated that. Because there was no way for him to play it.
Yeah, with that version with the remote, obviously they wanted to, you know, go with the dominant hand, so right-handed people.
But, yep. Yeah. Well, we play a lot of VR games too, and so it's another thing where most of the games are pretty good about giving you the option for a left-handed option, but not all of them. And every once in a while, we'll run into one where it's like sucks because he can't change the controls.
This is an older game. I guess all these are older games now, but I remember one game that I was told, I'm right-handed, but I was told is pretty much impossible for a left-handed person to play, is Kid Icarus on 3DS, the 3DS Kid Icarus game. Because 3DS has, you know, like the stylus and the buttons, right? And it was just like the way it works is if you try to play with like stylus in left hand, buttons in right hand, it just like doesn't work.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Oh.
Interesting. I'll have to ask him. I mean, I think he's played that game. I'll have to ask him.
Yeah. Takamichi is left-handed. And like, yeah, he got stabbed in the hand. Is that just going to heal up or what?
Well, that's the thing. I'm wondering, though, how has he significantly changed his own future now? Like, maybe not in a significant way, but there's going to be, like, he's going to have a permanent scar. And maybe it's affected his outcomes, you know, in his future outcomes, because he might have permanently injured his hand. I don't know.
Or he might just have, like, anime healing where it's just like, oh, it's better now.
That could be, yeah. Anyway, you know, he's not doing so hot. And so Kiyomasa's kind of laughing. He's like, this is all you can do. You can't really punch me. You're a little thug. I'm going to kill you. But then, you know, he's got a lot of gumption. And so Takamichi bites him on the side. And even like,
I almost don't really get the physics of this. Like,
what do you mean?
How do you bite someone through their clothes on their like side? Like, it wasn't even like an arm or anything. It was like his side.
Oh, that didn't bother me.
I don't know. It's just like, and it was like, apparently, I don't know, like, he was wearing like a jacket. I don't know. Like, could you bite through that where it would actually be painful at all? I don't know.
I kind of didn't notice what he was wearing. I just thought he had like a thin shirt on, but maybe he had something thicker. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently, Takamichi just has a big mouth. I mean, he cries a lot, so maybe that's...
I think he could bite him. I think he can bite him even... Yeah, I don't know. When your life is on the line, people probably have pretty strong bite strength.
Yeah.
Anyway, he bites him, and then he climbs on top of him and chokes him out, and chokes Kiyomasa out until he goes unconscious. So this is interesting. I kind of want to talk about this briefly. So I didn't see this coming because I think I was... maybe underselling the show a little bit insofar as I thought he was just going to literally punch him out. But what they do is they stick to this idea that there's no way Takamichi could actually really fight this guy. So he does this instead, which works. But I think I was thinking, okay, cliche, this is going to be the moment that he pulls like the scene from Back to the Future when Marty's dad punches out Biff, you know, and it's like, how could this nerdy thin guy really punch out this hulking jock? But that happens in that movie. And so I thought that was going to happen here, that like the little tiny Takamichi was going to just throw a super strong punch and knock Kiyomasa out in surprise. But they actually don't do that. They kind of, it's a little smarter here. I think they just sort of like, he just chokes him out. So I don't know. I'm kind of saying, okay, show, that's actually a little more believable what you're doing here. I think that's better than the trope.
I do think it's better, but it's still a little bit unbelievable. Like, come on, Kiyomasa, how did you let him get behind you and on your back?
Yeah. It'd have been better if he'd like, I guess the bite maybe, but like,
yeah,
I
would have that's the argument that it would be like the bite was, he just caught him off guard and allowed Takamichi to get behind him and onto his like neck.
I don't think they would let Takamichi, this will be an interesting thing to see in the future, but I think at this point I've seen enough of Takamichi to think that he would not pick up the knife and stab him. If he had done that, it would have made it more believable, but I think they're really trying to paint Takamichi as the pacifist thug. He even wore a shirt this whole episode that says like, make peace, or something like that.
Love and peace.
So I don't think he'll ever like literally kill anyone or pull a knife out on them. I don't think. Anyway, yeah, he knocks him out.
And all of Kiyomasa's like thug, you know, underlings, they kind of just watch it, and they even just kind of like they insult Kiyomasa after he's like unconscious. They're like, damn, bro, you lost that fight. How could you lose? Like, they don't help him. They're not even like shocked necessarily. They're just like, wow, you suck.
You're a 6'5", 15-year-old. How could you let that 14-year-old kill you? Whatever.
But now it's their turn to, like, you know, gang up on Kakamichi.
Yeah, they're getting ready to. And then this is what Crocodile mentioned a moment ago. Like, Akun and all of his other three friends show up. And they were basically inspired what Takamichi had been doing. Like, oh, you're manning up so much. We need to do the same. And like Croc said, they don't really put up much of a fight, but it's a great delay tactic, you know?
Yeah.
It helps.
Yeah, they stall for time.
Stalling for time. And then the last thing we see in the episode is that the ambulance is arriving. So I think it's pretty fair to say at this point that Draken will most likely survive. So.
Yeah, but there's gotta be some twist to this. Like, it's not going to be Draken survives. Takamichi goes back. Hinata is alive this time, and everything's
oh no.
Story. Yeah. There's going to be like there's two more seasons of this, and also half a season of this.
Right. So, I think it's going to change things in a new direction. Like, there's going to be a new. Yeah.
And like, we still know there's that other like modern boss of the Tokyo Manji gang who hasn't really played a role in the past yet. And Takamichi has walked past him at one point. Like, they kind of pointed him out that he's around, but you know, he hasn't kind of enter the stage yet. So
yeah, he's very much, that was very much a plan to be like, this is going to be a big deal in the future.
Yeah,
I kind of see him maybe rising to power or something later on. So
yeah, but maybe he'll save Draken will be fine. You know, there's going to be a little bit of a cool down after this big, you know, skirmish. Takamichi's is gonna find little Naoto, keep forgetting what his name is, go back to the future, and then realize Draken's alive now, but something else is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I'm really curious to see. I really am looking forward to him going back to the future again, because I feel like there's some opportunities for things to change. And I'm also equally curious to see if Naota or whatever notices any of it. I don't think he will, because from what we've seen before, like, he's impervious to time shifts.
Yeah,
or something.
I guess there's this Hanma character, like, Hanma's probably the weirdest character so far, that he kind of just showed up out of nowhere. Everyone even commented, like, no one knew who this guy was. I didn't know him. Naota didn't know him. And he just, like, apparently can put up a fight with Mikey, and he's, like, been one of the only characters to do that. But literally, he kind of just showed up out of nowhere and doesn't seem to really have much to him other than, you know, I like to fight. I don't like you.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Is he going to amount to much more than that? Well, is he going to amount to much more than that? Or is he just going to be just, I don't know, just a guy who's...
I think so far I've just been assuming that. I think I've just been assuming he's just a guy that's strong on Mobius that, for whatever reason, our good guys didn't know existed.
Yeah, it's just a little bit weird.
Yeah, maybe there's more to it, but I kind of think I think I've been going along with just thinking, oh, he's just a strong guy these guys haven't met before. I guess. I don't know. All right. Well, that's it. Draken has re-risen. Yeah, you're right. I mean, like, this is a long ass show, and I know enough to know that I believe this goes on for a long time. I think you pointed it out one time that, like, stuff happens for seasons, and
I just know there's still half of this season left, and then there's two more seasons after this. So
right.
Who knows how it, like, I wasn't even sure, like, maybe at one point they save Hinata and, like, that problem is done, but then there's a new problem.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But now I'm not so sure. I feel like maybe this show is just, like, trying to fix the Tokyo Manji stuff. You know, like, every season is another, like, oh, we've gone in a new direction. We got to fix it now this way. You know, I don't know. So that is it. Takamichi stepping up he's not really cut out. Him and his friends, all of them. There was like a brief flashback scene in this episode where Takemichi was like, "Let's become thugs. We'll kick the asses of these guys," and immediately get their asses kicked.
Yeah, and it was like a prelude to the very first episode where he's like, "We're gonna beat up those third years or whatever, and show them, you know, we're gonna climb to the top of the mountain." And obviously, they bit off more than they could chew and got beat up. And that was like the start of this whole thing.
Yeah, I wish I had a note about this. I don't really want to dwell on it, but there was that scene where he was just like deciding this was going to be his life, and he had like a reason for it. And I just remember when I was watching it, the only thing I don't remember the specifics. I just remember thinking to myself, "Really? Okay. Like, I don't know. Sounds like a bad plan to me, but you do you." Okay. Let's move on to the final premiere, One Piece. One Piece, episode 770. Wait, is it 772? Oh, yeah, it is. Okay. It is, because I was thinking, I'm confused. Our episode is 470. Okay. Yeah, episode 772, The Legendary Journey, The Dog and the Cat and the Pirate King. So, there's like a brief scene kind of disconnected from everything in this episode at the beginning where, like, the minks outside are kind of like just relishing the fact that their kings are now getting along. Like, one of them even's like, "No, we can go to sleep anytime we want."
I think Carrot mentions, like, you know, this all happened before I was born, right? Or when I was young.
Yeah.
Because so they've been basically at each other. They used to be friends, but have been at each other's throats for, you know, Carrot's lifetime.
Yeah. I think she's like 15 or something like that. Yeah. So. For over a decade, they've been separated and, you know, split the kingdom up. Back in the whale tree, everybody's like, "Oh, we're now an alliance and we're going to do this stuff." But Luffy says, "I do have one condition. And that is, we will help you with your Wano problem. But first, you have to wait for us because we have to go save Sanji."
"That'll be quick. Just, you know, we got to go pick him up and then we'll be on our way."
Yeah. It's not like the name of a big arc or anything. Huge battles.
I forget who says it, if it's one of the ninjas or if it's Dogstorm or whatever, and like Big Mom is no joke, and Luffy's like, "I'm not gonna fight her."
Yeah, that was interesting that he said that. Yeah,
he's like, my plan is just to get in and get out." He didn't say that, but that's basically where he's going. He's like, "I just want to get Sanji and then we'll go to Wano. That's the plan."
Yeah,
I have a feeling it won't go that smoothly.
That's not his typical MO, right?
Especially when like Big Mom was the first emperor, where he basically said like, "You're on." That was way back. Yeah,
because remember he wanted to defeat her because he wants the Fishman Island kingdom to be under his protection, under his flag or whatever.
Yeah,
"I'm gonna take you on," but no, here he's like, "I'm not gonna fight her."
Yep, he said that.
That's interesting. My next note here, the Beast Pirates arrive back at Zoe. So yes, Jack and his little fleet of Beast Pirate people are now back at Zoe. They've kind of made their way back and they say, "What are we going to do?" And Jack says, "Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to kill the elephant." And everybody's like, "Huh?" Oh yeah. Sheep's head's there. And he's like hung upside down because I guess he failed. And everybody's like, "How are you going to kill that thing? It's so huge."
Yeah, even the Sheephead's partner, whatever her name is, was like, "Where do you even begin? Like, how do you kill that thing?"
You know, one thing I was noticing in this episode too, which I don't have an answer for, so I don't mind speculating on this. But you know, whenever they show like Zunisha's face, like you don't see its eyes.
Yeah,
and I'm like, is that because their eyes are like really deeply sunken into their face, or do they not have eyes? And I just kind of thought
of it as like a stylization thing.
I thought so too. I think I've always thought that, but it kind of occurred to me watching this episode where I'm like, wait, is the elephant blind? Or is it just, I do think it's probably a style thing, but it is strange to me. We never see its eyes. It's just kind of like, I don't know. And I have nothing to base that on. Like, I know I've seen all of One Piece, but like, I don't think it's ever been elaborated on or anything. So I don't think I'm like spoiler, but I'm just thinking like, I'm almost thinking like, will that be revealed, you know, in the future that the giant elephant can't see or something? But I actually don't know. I don't think so, but because it does just sort of wander around, right? So I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm just sort of wheels are turning in my head. I'm like, does it have eyes? I don't know. But I think I've always been of the mind what you're saying, that it's just like you just don't see it.
Yeah, that's what I would have thought. It's just stylized that he's always got like a shadow on his face or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Then Dogstorm explains that he and Cap Diver were on Whitebeard's ship. So it's a little more complicated. And there's like a funny scene where Usopp is trying to take notes and he's like, explain it to me again.
Yeah, I actually had to look this up. I'm like, wait, didn't he already say this? Or like, what did Dogstorm say before? But he said he was with Shanks. So that's what Dogstorm said before.
But the short of it is that Dogstorm and Cat Viper were part of Whitebeard's crew. But then there was a brief time when Whitebeard was with. It's complicated. So they were on Whitebeard's crew because they were with Odin, who was on Whitebeard's crew.
Yeah.
But Odin briefly went with Roger. And when that happened, his vassals, a.k.a. in this Dogstorm and Cat Viper, went with him. So they were briefly on Roger's ship.
Mm-hmm.
But they do make a point to point out that, like, they never went to Laugh Tale. Like, these two never went there. And then my next note says, everyone is connected. Because that's when, like, Frankie's like, dude, did you know that, I forget the guy's name, the guy who built the Oro Jackson, he was my mentor. Whatever that guy's name was, Water 7 guy. So it's like everybody knows everybody.
Yeah. So Frankie says that, like, his mentor was, you know, the person who made Captain Goldwater's ship. They talk about Crocus comes up in this conversation because he was on.
Oh, yeah, Crocus. Yeah.
He was on Goldwater's crew. Brooke mentions the doctor whose name I forget. He gets cut off by Nami at this point. But I actually, you know, kind of forgot some of Brooke's backstory at this point, but.
Well, yeah, Brooke, do you want a refresher or do you care?
No, I just don't remember.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, it was a Crocus. Brooke was going to bring up Crocus because of Laboon. But Nami cuts him off. He says, I have a question about Crocus. And she asks about the log pose. She's like, well, wait, why do I have the log pose if there are these pony glyphs, these road pony glyphs? Like, what's the deal? That's when the commercial break happens. When we come back, Dogstorm explains that all log poses eventually lead to a revelation. So they've been operating under this idea forever that the log poses will all routes lead to Laugh Tale.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not literally that way. The way it works is all log poses eventually lead you to something that makes you realize that you need road poneglyphs to find Laugh Tale.
Yeah, so it's like a step on the journey, but it's not the end of the journey, wherever the log poses point to.
Right.
And it was a little bit vague about like what are the log poses actually pointing to, but they kind of emphasize that, you know, the One Piece and Laugh Tale are like beyond that end point.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, exactly. And it even talks about the fact that, you know, Roger did it the way you were supposed to do it. You guys have kind of skipped a step. But it's like the way Roger did it is he followed the log poses, got to the revelation, and then realized he had to go back and get the poneglyphs, where you guys haven't even made it to the end of the Grand Line, and you already know about these poneglyphs. So they kind of have a head start here.
And I mentioned before, because they have Robin, that gives them a big advantage over really anyone else trying to find this place. because I don't know of anyone else who can read these things. So.
Yep. Yes, yeah, so I remember. It's an interesting thing, though. I think like the real interesting bit about this is that like Roger had to start over, which I don't think was ever mentioned before. But like we know that Roger was looking for Poneglyphs because remember back in Skypiea that he wrote his name on that one Poneglyph and everything. And it's like that must have been after he started over, I guess. Anyway. They all start to leave the whale tree and they're kind of making their way down and everybody's talking about, or like somebody, maybe it's Luffy or somebody's like, it's like, oh, you met Roger. Like you knew Roger and stuff. And like, you know, Cat Viper and Dogstorm are like, yeah, yeah. You know, we weren't with him for very long and stuff. And then Momo says, yeah, I remember meeting Roger when I was very young. To which Usopp or somebody is like, well, wait a minute. He died like, that would have been over 2 decades ago.
Haha, just a joke. But what if there's something weird going on?
Something weird.
What if Roger never died and he just went into hiding in Wano?
Yeah. So all we know here is that Momo says he remembers, vaguely remembers meeting Roger when he was younger. But yeah, when you look at the dates, it doesn't work out.
Momo is either older than 20, which seems weird, or Roger didn't die. Or something else.
Yeah. Very interesting. And finally, this is the part, I took this note, but I actually don't really quite understand it. But Cat Viper says something like, the next thing we need to do is we meet up with Marco, the Phoenix, the first mate of Whitebeard's crew. Now, I don't know why they need to do this. Did he say?
This seems that, no, he hasn't said. That was like the end of the episode. And like, I wrote that down too, because that seems like a key point. Like, I wasn't expecting Cat Viper. Obviously, we've learned that Cat Viper is more than just, you know, some random guy who lives on an elephant, that he was, you know, a retainer to Odin on the, even with Roger for a bit. But yeah. So I'm trying to remember, like, okay, Marco, I do remember Marco, like back in Marineford, because he was with Whitebeard right then. If you asked me, like, what happened to Marco in Marineford, I couldn't tell you. Like, I don't remember. Like, did he get beat? Did he get killed? Like, obviously, he doesn't seem to be dead, but I don't remember what, like, where did we leave off with Marco, the Whitebeard's subordinate?
He wasn't dead.
I just remember him fighting a bunch in Marineford. I just don't quite remember, like, what the end result was. Gotcha. And, like, have we seen him since? Like, that would have been, you know, did we see him around Fishman Island or Punk Hazard or any of these other places that's happened since then after the time skip? I don't think so. So I don't know what he's up to.
No, he might have appeared on a cover story, but I'm not certain.
Yeah.
So but now, yeah, definitely not in
now that
story
this is
proper.
Brought up again. Now that this is brought up again, I almost want to remind myself, like, okay, what happened with Marco and Marineford? We all know what happened with Whitebeard there, but I don't remember what happened with the one with Marco. Mm-hmm. And like he seemed powerful enough that he was memorable. Like he had like a phoenix ability, which seems like this phoenix fruit or whatever, which seems pretty darn useful. Like that's a top tier type of fruit. So
I'd say like I can not die type fruit. Yeah. So
I wasn't expecting Cat Viper to like, I guess he did say he was on Whitebeard's crew for a bit. Like
he would know him, of course.
So,
yeah.
So yeah. But what does he want with Marco right now? I'm not even sure what the Whitebeard pirates are doing right now. What, like, cause Whitebeard is dead. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I'm looking up a little bit here just out of curiosity.
Yeah, I want to look stuff up, but like I don't necessarily.
Let me look real quick just to make sure there wasn't something significant that happened.
Unfortunately, with this show being, you know, hundreds of episodes long, like stuff I'm trying to remember was literally like stuff, you know, from years and years and years ago. So.
Okay. Yeah. Not much. I'll tell you this. It might have been only in the newspapers that was mentioned. Chapter 909? No, okay. We're not even close to that. Okay, so nothing. I mean, they were shown That would have been episode 505. So we're, yeah, this happened before that. So he was shown with Ace at Whitebeard's funeral following the Marineford battle.
Okay, so he didn't die at Marineford.
He didn't die. He was shown he had like a bandage on his head.
Oh, and
he was,
this is ringing a bell. Yeah, actually.
Yeah, and he was there, and he's like, his grave is right next to where Ace's grave is. He was with Shanks. I'm sorry. He was with Shanks, but it was right next to Ace's grave. Yeah, so that's the last time we've seen him since then.
Okay.
And nothing else since then, so.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't honestly. I just had forgotten exactly, like, did he die?
Oh,
or
dude,
not? Like,
I feel you right now because I've forgotten this. Like, mm-hmm. I've seen beyond this. I have no idea where this is going with the Marco thing. I'm like, what are they? What? Why do they need to talk to this guy? I have no probably idea.
That's probably one interesting thing about rewatching at this point. It's kind of filling in the gaps in your memory about, oh yeah, I've seen this before, but. Like you remember, like, I'm assuming you remember like the main things that happened, but some of like the small.
Big things, right? Yeah. And like this was an arc. This one and the next arc are both like I remember little bits, like the main key things that happen, but like a lot of the little detail. I think I remember more about the next arc than I do this one. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't remember where the end of this arc is, other than I know exactly the very last thing that happens in this arc, but I don't remember like this whole part. With the tree stuff, like I don't remember much of this. So, like I said last episode, I was surprised how much they were talking about Wano. I think I just forgot that. All right, well that's it for One Piece. Again, Zoe is the arc of the lore drops. Just tons of lore drops. Also, seeing Carrot. At the beginning of this episode, it also made me realize, man, we really don't see much of her for the longest time.
If I didn't know that she was like a fan favorite, I would think just where we are right now that she's just sort of like a side character that's not that important.
Yeah.
Like Wanda is way more important at this point.
Exactly. And, I kind of want to keep saying this, but like she never really becomes that important.
Okay.
But she does stick around in a fun way, but like she's not like that big a character, but people really like her.
Yeah.
And so it's just, I think that's why she's so memorable. Like at this point, it's like you wouldn't even recognize her being anything different than almost any other random mink at this point.
Right. Like if I didn't have any like outside context or foreknowledge of anything, and I had not that I've seen One Piece past this, but like, if you had to ask me which character from Zoe is most likely to join the Straw Hat Pirates, I'd be like, Wanda, I guess.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or maybe Dogstorm, like, or Cat Viper, right? One of those three.
Yeah.
And like, oh yeah, Carrot is just at this point to me, just like, oh yeah, she's like Wanda's assistant and she chimes in here and there. She has like some mink fighting abilities, but you know, so do a bunch of other minks.
Right. I mean, like the only thing that she's done of note to this point is that she was the first mink they met.
Yeah,
that was it. Like she was the first one. But other than that, she's pretty much just been in the background. So, interesting. Okay, well, let's talk about flavor alerts.
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Do we have anything this week we really want to prop up as being nominatable?
Takemichi knocks out Kiyomasa.
Are you serious?
I don't know.
Like a worst moment? I don't know. It didn't bother me, I guess, because again,
I was thinking, is that good enough to be a best moment?
Oh, I don't know.
Like, it's not really a best moment, but it's kind of like a, I don't know. It's not really a best moment, but it's not really a worst moment. It's just kind of like, you did something, sort of.
Yeah, you finally did something.
With the help of narrative bullshit. So.
Yeah. Again, I think the best thing about that moment to me is that he didn't just outright punch him. The fact that he had to kind of do like, you know, a cheap way out, I guess is the way to describe it. Although, I mean, if I was in that position, I probably would have done the same. But like, I'm just saying that like, he didn't become like magically a badass in that moment.
No.
He's still weak. which I appreciate the story for not just leveling him up in that moment. Because I think that would have been the tropey thing to do, but no, I don't think it makes that an amazing moment to me. I think it's just like a better than average moment. We can't really nominate animation because we don't do that. So can't talk about that. Although that was probably to me the most memorable thing of the evening.
This feels like cheating. But best performance by a voice actress, Abby Trott as Momo. I mean, she won last year, but just this episode especially, I feel like, yeah, there's a reason why she won. It's a very good performance.
Yep.
So
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I'm fine nominating her again.
We'd always debate it next time, you know.
She may not win again, but I think it's worth nominating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the way that she's kind of like freaking out and kind of trying to like walk herself through like what she has to do, and kind of like there's this energy and kind of desperation, and sometimes like a little bit of levity in the way that like she's kind of just like yelling in this kind of obviously chaotic and hectic situation. It's good. I think also we don't have this category anymore, but I think like the dialogue in Dandadan, like the way they translate it from Japanese, everything like flows really naturally in terms of like I doubt what we're hearing in English is like one to one with what they said in Japanese, because you know that doesn't work that way. But they did a really good job with like just the flavor and how people like speak and the words they use, and things like that. Like there was actually one part in this episode where they're underground and Okarun mentioned something about like the worm like releasing toxic gas, and Momo just kind of offhand in her sort of like desperate kind of yelly voice is like, we get trapped under this cave and now they're farting gas at us kind of thing. So it's fun.
Yeah, I like that. Added that.
We added Mikey for best character. We can add Draken. Let's just go add Draken.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Yeah, yeah.
We've been kind of tiptoeing on it or whatever.
Best character male. Yeah, I like that. He's a good guy. I like him. I will not nominate Takemichi though. I don't hate him, but I
joked last week, worst character. Before he stood up for himself a little bit.
Yeah. So. I don't know. I think again, he may be a product of bad storytelling, or he may be a bad character. I'm not sure, but it's one of those two.
Yeah.
Frustrating. Double checking here.
Do you want to do best fight, Okarun versus Third Eye, or that animation? Yeah, sure. Basically, I think
that was insane.
Yeah, I don't really think of it as like a fight, but you know, there's enough fight to it.
Yeah, he's kind of running away mostly, but I do like it.
But there's bits where they throw punches, so it's cool. I would say it's it fits as.
By
a
the
fight.
Way, it does remind me. The Evil Eye is using like this ball of energy.
Oh yeah,
is that supposed to be like a soccer thing?
Well, I don't. Maybe.
Does he like soccer? Wasn't there something about like he had a poster on his wall? Gigi had like a favorite team.
There was a thing with the Kitos. They had like a soccer team on their wall, and they asked Okarun like, "What's the best, you know, national team?" And Okarun saw the poster and answered that team. I forget what it was. Now Gigi is like an athletic person, so maybe like obviously soccer is big in Japan. We know that from a certain other show on this block, but. I would not be surprised if Gigi was like, you know, canonically like a soccer fan. I don't know if he's or not.
Yeah, I think I may be reading too much into it, but I think that's what I'm getting here. It's like the Evil Eye is tapping into Gigi's like love of soccer and is using this power like a soccer ball.
Eventually in Blue Lock, we're going to get powers like this.
Yeah.
Where they become like Super Saiyan soccer players.
Yeah, I mean, I would like. I think I might like that. I also don't. I don't really believe that. We were talking about that earlier.
I was not being totally serious, but
no. I know, and we kind of joking earlier. But I just to put my cards on the table. I don't think Blue Lock will ever get to that. But I think it's going to try metaphorically to get to that. Again, they've already done it with the glowing eyes, and like sometimes there'll be like a shot of a character who's like wrapped up in chains. You know, it's all just visual. but not really happening. You know, it's not real power. Although I will say that, like, to be fair, I'm not joking when I say that I feel like this guy has the Sharingan, because, like,
yeah,
it does feel almost supernatural that he has this ability. Almost. All right. Anything else?
No, that's good for now, I think.
Okay, well, that'll do it for episode 470 of the Toonami Escape podcast. Thanks for being here, Seda.
Yep, no problem.
And I want to thank Crocodile for also being here earlier. And we will be back next week for the same lineup again. And we will see you then. And until then, later.